to the Screencast. My name is Chris Bowen, and I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft covering the Northeast United States. This is based on a session that we gave as part of our Northeast MSDN Roadshow series, and it's a brief introduction to Windows Azure from a developer's perspective. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'm cbowen@microsoft.com, or reach out to me through my blog. So, cloud computing. We've been hearing a lot about it and might be wondering, as a developer, why should I care? How can it help me, and how does it improve my day-to-day life as a developer? Well, to help answer that, I put together a list of some things that are related to application ownership. Not an exhaustive list, but fairly representative of the things that you should consider as you create, deploy, and maintain an application. Now, I've also taken the liberty of dividing this list into two sublists. That as a developer, the things that we enjoy, stuff we like, and on the right-hand side, the stuff that we might not rather deal with. And for many developers, it can fall out something like this. I think you'll appreciate the PowerPoint skills here. And there we go. Very tongue-in-cheek, but the idea is that developers would rather spend their time focusing on making applications that satisfy requirements, that are architected well, and the stuff on the right-hand side is important. In fact, it's critical to owning an application. But that the kinds of things that developers may not have the bandwidth for or even the expertise to deal with effectively. Well, it turns out the things on the right-hand side map very, very well to the offerings of Windows Azure. And so the point of this slide is that we can focus as developers on creating great applications and plugging them into the Windows Azure platform to take advantage of the kinds of things that you see listed here as the basic services provided by Azure. We'll spend the rest of the screencast going into details about how we can do that as a developer. So here's a brief overview of the Windows Azure platform. On the left-hand side, you can see compute, which essentially means the ability to run your applications in the cloud. There's a variety of different storage APIs, which I'll talk about a little bit later. There's also management APIs, which we can use to get information about and to manage our deployments in the cloud. Connectivity and access control are related to the Windows Azure App Fabric offering. And on the right-hand side, it's essentially, you can think of it as a separate offering. It's SQL Azure. It's a relational database in the cloud, which you can use with cloud applications or with on-premise applications. Now, I won't have the time to go through SQL Azure in detail, but you can find plenty of information about this through the resources that I'll have for you in the screencast. Now, Windows Azure is not an all-or-nothing proposition. You don't need to move all of your data and all of your applications into the cloud to take advantage of its offerings. In fact, you could just take parts of your data. Take maybe a segment of your data that you need to share more easily with customers or other companies, or form into some kind of data warehouse, move that into the cloud. Or take a single application, or maybe a subset of an application, some web services that you might be hosting, and move those into the cloud. And once things are in Windows Azure, you don't have to use them all from the cloud as well. They can be combined in a variety of ways, from cloud-to-cloud communications to on-premise-to-cloud applications. So you have an installed local on-premise application that maybe is looking to the cloud to save or to load some data or to utilize some services that you've now located with Windows Azure. You can very simply do this, and Windows Azure will support you in any of these variety of scenarios. So how do I develop for Windows Azure? We'll talk about the design and architecture of Windows Azure a little bit later on, but for now it's enough to focus on how Visual Studio can help you when you're taking an application and publishing that into the cloud through Windows Azure. Part of the process of deploying an application is associating each of the projects that you have with a kind of role within Windows Azure. And these roles help Windows Azure better host and understand the behaviors that will be exhibited by that application or that project in Windows Azure. We talk about two kinds of roles, web roles and worker roles. A web role, you can think of as a typical end-user facing or web service type application, and this could include things like ASP.NET running on IIS. A worker role, on the other hand, is more for background processing, and you could think of it as being very similar to a batch job or to a Windows service that can from time to time or constantly look for data to be processed, process that data, and move on. These things can be used in any combination. You can have any combination of web and worker role. You don't have to have both. You can have either or, and you can have multiples of each of them as your requirements indicate. And these can communicate in a variety of ways, including network protocols, and also through some of the storage options that are part of the Windows Azure environment, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Finally, it's important to understand that deploying applications to Windows Azure doesn't necessarily have to mean .NET. We can use a variety of different kinds of technologies in Windows Azure, and this is kind of beyond the scope of this screencast, but there's plenty of documentation and other screencasts on using Windows Azure for non-.NET purposes, including things like Java or PHP, etc. Associating your projects in your application with roles in Windows Azure is only part of the story. A very critical concept to understand is that Windows Azure can take a role and run as many copies of it at the same time as you've indicated. This is called the instance count, and it's your way of optimizing the scalability of your application and fine-tuning your use of Windows Azure resources based on the requirements that you may have at any given point. In this example, we have various instance counts associated to each of the roles that compose our application. Now, these numbers have no basis in reality. It's just to show you that you essentially have a virtual dial that you can adjust up and down to indicate how many copies of each of these web and worker roles you need running at any given point in time. It's also very important to understand that this is not just a one-time setting. You can adjust these over time as your requirements change. Perhaps you've just launched a new web, a new advertising campaign, and now you're getting a lot more traffic coming into your site. Well, you can dial up the instances of the various roles to account for that increased traffic. And on the other side, you can dial it back down again when that advertising campaign has kind of faded away. You don't want to pay for resources that you are not utilizing. So this is one of the great benefits of Windows Azure is that you only need to pay for what you use, and you can easily adjust the amount of resources that you're using based on your requirements. So writing code for Windows Azure is made easier by the integration of tools within Visual Studio, both for Visual Studio 2008 and for 2010. These include project templates and other tools to help you with writing code, and also what's called the Developer Fabric, or Dev Fabric. You can think of this as a locally running version of the Windows Azure environment that will help you to write, deploy, and test applications on your local machine without needing a connection or connecting to and deploying to an actual Windows Azure environment. This will allow you to do things like local debugging, and we also have other things to help you writing code, to extend the applications using APIs, for example, for logging and performing maintenance as well. Now, there's a couple ways to get the tools for Windows Azure development. The way I recommend is to use the Web Platform Installer, which you can find at microsoft.com/web. Just install that, and it's a great tool to help you find and install platform extensions, developer tools, and other kinds of things. Let me show that to you. I'll bring this up. I'm running version 2, and just to make sure you understand, the first time you run this, you won't see the various options that I have here. The last three nodes you have to enable manually. So go to the Options node, and click Media, Developer Tools, and Enterprise to turn those on. You will want to do that because the Azure environment tools live under the Developer Tools node. So turn those on, say OK, and then underneath that you'll see Visual Studio Tools, and you can customize that. Here it already knows that I have the Windows Azure tools installed, but if you didn't, it's as simple as clicking the checkbox and anything else you wanted, and clicking Install, and it will take care of the rest for you. It really is a fantastic tool. It's a great time saver. So check that out. It's microsoft.com/web. The other way to get it is to go and directly download the tools. This is Windows Azure Tools for Microsoft Visual Studio 1.2, June 2010. That is the latest release as of this recording. And you can find that linked from msdn.com/azure. Now, to fully release an application, you'll also need an account on Windows Azure. So go to windows.azure.com. You can create an account and then purchase and select an offering there. But I'll point out, you don't need to do that until you're ready to deploy an application, because the developer tools will give you that local environment that you can use for debugging and testing an application locally without having to actually publish that application into Windows Azure. So keep that in mind. But to do everything and to publish to the cloud in a production or staging environment, you will need to create that account. So with the tools installed for Visual Studio, we can go ahead and create our first Windows Azure application. So I'll switch over to Visual Studio 2010, which I'm running as administrator because the tools, the developer fabric environment requires elevated privileges on your system to run. And if you forget that, Visual Studio will give you a message that's helpful to remind you of that when you go to run your Windows Azure applications. But we can go ahead now and create a new project. So I'll do that and show you that I have a new node within the installed templates, and that's the cloud node. Within that is the Windows Azure Cloud Service project template, again, part of the developer tools when you install them. I'll pick all the defaults here and say OK. And the first thing Visual Studio will do is ask me to compose the different roles of my Windows Azure project. And this, you can see here, there's various languages from Visual Basic, C# and F#, and different role types within each of the languages, and I can compose them as I wish. I'll keep things fairly basic for this demonstration and add in a basic ASP.NET web role and also a worker role as well. And if you want, you can go through and rename these as well by clicking on this button. We'll keep everything by default and say OK. When I do this, Visual Studio is going to create three projects for me. Two projects will be the actual roles that I specified. The third project will actually be an overall cloud project to track the different roles and the settings that we have for Windows Azure. So to show you this, let me collapse the projects, and then we'll go into some detail in how they work. So here I have three projects, Cloud Service 1, and then the two roles, the web role and the worker role. Well, let's open up the web role project and take a look. If you go through this on your own machine, you'll notice that it's actually a very, pretty much a standard ASP.NET web forms application. And that's great. We're not changing a lot on you. This is the stuff that you all know, and you can just take this and run this in Windows Azure. Now, a thing to point out, though, is there's a different file in here than what you'll get by default in ASP.NET. There's a webroll.cs file. Let me open that up and walk through a little bit of the code just to tell you what it's doing. This is essentially your chance to speak with and listen to Windows Azure. And we're within a web role application. This means that I can both receive events from and also send or communicate with Windows Azure as well. Here, the default code is to set up an onStart method, which Windows Azure will call when it's ready to run us as a web role. And I can respond to that and say, oh, great, you're about to run me, let me go set up some diagnostics, and let me set up some events that I might want to respond to as I'm running. And then, in particular, there's one event that's wired up for us by default, and that is this roleEnvironment.changing event. And the actual processing happens right below it, and there's another method here for roleEnvironment.changing. And without going into too much detail, the only thing this is doing is looking at the bundle of changes that we receive from Windows Azure. And it's asking, saying what kind of changes were those. You can see there's a fairly long class file name here, class name here, but it's basically saying, were there any changes to my configuration settings? If there were, let's go ahead and indicate that we want to restart this instance to begin to incorporate those changes into our roles operations. Now, that, again, these are just the default settings. So you can go through and modify this as you need. There's other events that you can respond to, and you can respond to these events in any different way that you wish. Now, if I switch over and take a look at the other project as well, I'll collapse down the web role, and let's take a look at worker role 1. This is a very simple project. In fact, it has just properties references, a config file, and then, just like we saw in the web role project, we have a worker role.cs file, which I'll open up, and we'll go full screen to take a look at the code here as well. Now here, the primary difference is that we have a run method. And this is because, unlike the web application, we don't have a start page or something to run within IIS. Basically, Windows Azure is going to look for an entry point method to call, and this will serve as that entry point. And again, just some basic default code here, using some tracing to write out some status. And then in here, it's going to loop and basically sleep for 10 seconds, wake up, say that it's doing some work, and then go back to sleep. Again, this is stuff you'll want to change as you actually create an application. And then below that will be the familiar code that we saw from the web role, including diagnostics and setting up an event to respond to those changes from Windows Azure. And finally, the same thing that we saw before is the role environment changing method that, again, looks for config changes and then restarts the instance as we need. The next thing to point out is the third project. Let me collapse down this. Let's take a look inside Cloud Service 1. You can see by using the wizard to create our Windows Azure project, we already have two roles wired up as Windows Azure projects. And so here we can see the two roles, Web Role 1, Worker Role 1, and if you right-click on the Roles node, you can add further roles as you need, whether they're existing roles, role projects, or just from-scratch projects that you'd like to include. Also, I'll point out that there's two files here for configuration settings, Service Configuration and Service Definition. These are XML files that we can use to set the various properties and configuration that we would need when running within Windows Azure. And we can also make changes to the role settings as well for Windows Azure just by double-clicking on the entries underneath the Roles folder. So if I double-click on Web Role 1, you can see there's various settings that we can modify here, including trust levels, settings, endpoints, and things like that. But I wanted to point out, this is actually where that instance count that I had mentioned earlier can be modified. The default's going to be 1, which means just I need one copy of this project running at any given point by Windows Azure. If you need fault tolerance, you can set this to 2, or go beyond this and set it higher for even increased scalability. Now, the instance count is only one of the choices for your instance behavior. The other is virtual machine size. And this can range from small to extra large, and essentially tells Windows Azure what kind of virtual machine to host this role on. And if you click on this I button here, you'll actually get a list of the different virtual machine sizes. And you can see from small to extra large, the things that vary are the number of CPU cores you have access to, the amount of memory that you'll have locally, and then also the amount of disk space in that local instance that you would have available to you. So based on your own requirements, you can adjust the size of the virtual machine as you wish. And so before running this application for the first time, I want to change the instance count for the worker role. So I double-click on the worker role entry. Let's change the instance count to 2. We'll keep the VM to a small size. And now I can actually hit the build and hit F5 here to build, package, and deploy the application to Windows Azure. Now this is also going to start up the local developer fabric. And when you see that running, there'll be an Azure flag in your tray, notification tray. You can actually right-click on this and it will give you some options, including show the development fabric UI and the storage UI. Now I'm going to do that right now, but before I do that, I'm going to point out I'm running the actual the web application. You can see that here, my ASP.NET application. It's running locally, and it's connected to the Windows Azure Developer Fabric, and I'll be able to see that just by clicking on this UI button, which will bring up this view into what's happening inside Windows Azure. So here, under Cloud Service 1, we can see Web Role 1, which has exactly one instance because that's all we asked for. If I open up Worker Role 1, we'll see there's two instances, and these are zero-based. And if I click on any of these, you can see the output or the information from that role, including diagnostics and tracing information here. So this is the web role, and you can see that it's started, and any further events will also be printed out here as well. But if I switch to the Worker role, you can see here, you might recall that we had some code by default that would wake up every 10 seconds and emit some trace information, in this case, information working. And this is true because in both instances, so if I click back and forth, I can see both of them updating. If you want to see both instances at the same time, just click on this overall role name and you can see them here. Now I know that's awfully small, so let's go ahead and zoom in a bit and scroll down. And you can see these instances are actually now running independently of each other. They are running within our local developer fabric, but they are considered separate copies and separate instances of that same project. And this is exactly the same thing that's going to happen when you package and deploy this application up to Windows Azure. They will be created and run, created, deployed, and run for you on completely separate environments, completely different machines and different virtual machines. So now we can see the output from these. You might be wondering, well, how do I work with this? I can certainly get diagnostic information from this and use that to see what's going on. You can also go back into your code, set a breakpoint, and it's going to work exactly the same as you'd expect any other kinds of diagnostics to work. So when you're working locally with your developer fabric, just set some breakpoints, hit run, you'll be able to debug and step through code as if you were working on any other kind of application in Visual Studio. So now that you've run your application, and we'll assume for sake of demo that you've gone through and tested it and found any other issues and resolved them locally using the developer fabric, we can now look toward deploying the application into Windows Azure. Now, I'm not going to walk through the full process, but I want to point out the various options that you do have for doing that. If you right-click in Cloud Service 1, in our example here, you can see there's a Publish option here. Now, if you don't see this exact screen, make sure you're running the latest version of the developer tools. These were added fairly recently as of the June release. And you have a couple options here. The first is actually to create the service package only. And this is useful if you want to go directly to the Azure website and use the portal to deploy your package in that way without using Visual Studio. And you can do that. You can certainly go to azure.com, log into your account, create a service, and then it will prompt you to upload the code and the definitions that are required to run this project in Windows Azure. And it will take care of the rest for you at that point. You can also use Visual Studio to help both package and deploy the application. So this second choice will let you connect to the account that you've gone ahead and created at the Azure site. And again, you'd have to go and create that as a separate action here. Sign up for whatever offering you need. And then you can use those credentials here to tell Visual Studio to deploy this application to your particular service in Windows Azure. And you have a variety of options here as well. And once you do this and say OK, this will package up the application. It will then connect to Windows Azure, upload the definition and the code files for you, and then Windows Azure will take over from there, which is what we're going to talk about next. So at this point, you might be thinking, this is interesting, this is great. I know how to package and deploy things, but well, what happens when I package my application and send it to Microsoft? Where does it go? What does Microsoft do with it? And how does Windows Azure really step in to take care of that other stuff outside of application development that I had mentioned earlier in the screencast? Well, Windows Azure runs in one of a number of large data centers that we host around the world. And as an example, the PDC last year had a storage container, which is similar to the ones that are used for the Windows Azure environments today. And there's some pictures that I have here on the slide when I actually had a chance to walk around and take some pictures of it. And if you have interest in the actual physical hardware of the container and how things would actually work inside of a data center, I would recommend you check out this Channel 9 interview with Patrick Yance. And you can see I've shortened the link for you there. Feel free to pause this right now and take a look at that link. It's a pretty informative interview which walks through all details of how this kind of container works. But let's focus on how Windows Azure works. And so the machines in those containers and data centers contribute to what's called the Windows Azure Fabric. Each of the servers has an agent that reports back to the Fabric controller about the status and the health of what's happening on that particular server. This can include the details of the instances that are running and also of the physical hardware itself of each server. Now the Fabric is essentially built to run instances. And we've already talked about the instances and the instance counts for our compute-related roles. This means web roles, worker roles, kind of the code we want to run in the cloud. But there are also instances that we use for storage. And I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but the idea is that you can both store and retrieve data in an instance-based fashion within the cloud, and that can be used by other cloud-based applications or instances, and also by applications outside of the Windows Azure environment. But these are all based on instances, and they will run on these different servers within the Windows Azure Fabric, managed by the Fabric controller. Now, the controller is also useful not just for deploying these instances to available machines, but also for migrating them should a problem be detected. So if there's some kind of failure on a server, the Fabric controller can step in and look at the instances that are running on that machine and find new homes for those on different machines within the Fabric. So I'd like to show you how those parts work through a simple example. We have a service that we've written, and we've used the developer Fabric to debug and to work with locally, and we're now ready to publish that into the Windows Azure environment. Well, to do so, we need to publish the application. And when I do that, it actually breaks it up into two parts. One is the code itself, it's the application, and that's what we want to run as an instance within Windows Azure. The model represents all the configuration and the definition that we would need to tell Windows Azure to run our instances effectively. Now we're going to upload both of those, and you can do that in the ways I had mentioned before. You can go to the Windows Azure portal and you can upload those files manually. You can use the APIs, and you've seen this through the Visual Studio environment, that you can also right-click on your cloud project and say publish, which will then take care of the packaging and deploying of the application into Windows Azure. Now, whatever choice you've made, those things are uploaded, and the model is sent over to the Fabric Controller. The Fabric Controller understands what's happening with the various servers in the environment, and it knows which ones could potentially host the instances that we're requesting. So the model includes details such as the instance count, which could be one to many, depending on your requirements, and also the size of the virtual machine that you need to run the application, from small to extra large. Based on these and other settings that you're providing it, it can then figure out which machines are ready and able to run those instances in the cloud. So at that point, it instructs the service, or actually it copies out the service based on the instance count, which in this case is 3, to the various machines that can then host those instances. Now, it's doing more than just copying an application. It's actually communicating to the servers. It's ensuring that they're updated and patched and running the operating system, running the copying out the virtual machine instances, getting that running, and then also finally provisioning out the instance itself by sending the code and configuring it as requested. At that point, it can start up the instances. That's when our code actually can actually integrate with that. You remember back to the events in the CS files that I had showed you before, web role and worker roles.cs file. We can actually start up the instances, but we're not done just yet. Once they're started, we can then go ahead and tell the network to allow traffic to then be routed into those various instances. And this will, at that point, update both DNS and the load balancing systems to reflect whatever kinds of configuration we've requested of the Windows Azure environment. So we are now ready to run the application. It's running. We can use this as we expected. And the great thing about the Windows and Azure environment is at this point, it's taken care of us for us by Windows Azure. If a machine has to be taken down or has a problem, those instances can be migrated for us automatically. And in fact, if we have more than one instance running, instance count of 2 or higher, we can have essentially a fault tolerance built into this, where if one machine goes down, we'll have the other one running while that first machine is being migrated to a separate instance. And of course, as the instance count goes up even higher, you'll have even higher levels of scalability based on your requirements. At this point, I'd like to give you a high-level overview of the storage options available to you in Windows Azure, the first of which isn't actually pictured on the slide, and it's the idea of storing data locally to a running instance. So a web role or a worker role is going to be running inside of a virtual machine on top of a physical server in the Windows Azure environment, and you'll have access to an amount of storage dependent on the size of the VM that you've selected, from small to extra large. And you can use this storage and have that be stored specifically for that instance. And that can be useful in a variety of scenarios, especially when you need temporary storage or a caching storage that's specific to that instance. But if you need durable storage, or if you need storage that lives outside of a particular instance, you'll want to look toward the other options, including Windows Azure Storage, which provides a variety of different mechanisms for saving and loading data in Windows Azure. Including blobs, which are binary large objects, tables, which are lists of entities that you can then call into, queues, which are a useful way of storing data that you can then pull off from another end to then process. And it's useful, for example, for cross-role communication. So a website's web role might be queuing up work to be performed or data to be processed by other worker roles. And those worker roles can just watch those queues. And as work comes in on those queues, can process them and pull them off. Drives are related to your ability to use the standard NTFS APIs to access drives of storage in the cloud. Also, SQL Azure is a separate offering that's available to you, which essentially is going to give you a relational database solution in the cloud. And there's a lot to this. There's a lot of features in SQL Azure, and there's plenty of features in the Windows Azure storage offerings as well. I would recommend that you take a look at the screencasts and hands-on labs and tutorials that are out there today for each of these, so you understand what your options are and know how to work with them. The Windows Azure App Fabric provides a number of services useful for different cloud-based coding scenarios. The service bus can be useful for connecting applications together. Whether they're in the cloud or on-premise, you can use the service bus as an intermediary to connect applications and web services together to establish those communications in an easier fashion. Access control services can help you to establish what kind of data and services can be accessed by a user or by another application or web service. You can use claims-based access control to define which things can be allowed to be accessed in which scenarios. What you'll do is set up a policy based on a number of rules that you'll configure as part of Windows Azure, which collectively define your policy for when certain things can be accessed and by whom. The idea is that you can loop in both your own credentials from your own company, and then maybe add some rules for partner companies that you're also working with that may be using a different access control subsystem. But they can present a number of claims to you, and you can translate those claims based on trust that you've established with those companies to say, well, an employee of that company has the following permissions in the applications that we host and the services that we provide. Now, both the service bus and access control are based on WCF and they use standard-based communication, so you can use these in a very open way in a variety of scenarios. So we've covered a lot of ground in this screencast, but we're not quite done until you understand the pricing and the costs associated with using Windows Azure. Now, there are three primary pricing meters of using the core Windows Azure services. The first is compute. And it's based on the number of instances that you're running and how long you're running them. So we have a service hour base charge, and that's multiplied out by the number of instances that you're running. It's also affected by the size of the instances that you've chosen to run. Remember that by default, you'll be running under a small instance size. You can adjust that up as you need more resources, and that will affect the compute charge multiplier. Storage is based off not only the amount of data that you're storing, but the frequency with which you're accessing it. So storage and transactions. Bandwidth is quite simply based on the amount of data that you're transferring both in and out of a Windows Azure data center. Now, there are different options for subscribing to different levels of service within Windows Azure and different promotions that we have from time to time. So I would recommend that you check out the Azure.com website for the latest in pricing and for the latest in subscription options and different promotions that we may have. I would also recommend that you check out the TCO calculator, which is going to help you to model your expected use of Windows Azure and to get an idea of the cost that you might incur if you adopt that kind of model. A final point about pricing is I want to make sure you're aware that when you deploy an application to Windows Azure and then you decide to stop running it, if you click stop, you might think that you won't be charged for that, but I want you to keep in mind that we use essentially a hotel versus a water bill model. So if at a hotel, if you rented the room for a week, they really wouldn't care if you only used the room for 3 nights because that hotel room is no longer able to be rented out to anybody else. The same thing is true with our machines, the virtual machines that are running in the cloud. They are allocated to you for your application. So once it's deployed, that's when the compute charges are factored in. So if you do want to avoid those additional accrued charges for an application that you don't really need to have in the environment, just go ahead and delete it, and that will remove and that will stop those charges from accruing. And so to wrap up, here are some resources for you. Certainly check out the Windows Azure homepage at azure.com and the developer portal at msdn.com/azure, where I would recommend that you also download the Windows Azure training kit. You'll see a link for that on the left-hand side. Also, with the training kit, I would recommend you take a look at the Windows Azure Learning Course. This is hosted at Channel 9. If you go to channel9.msdn.com/learn, you'll see a good number of courses listed there. One of them is about Windows Azure and includes some labs and things that you can walk through, including also some screencasts about the content as well. And so, thank you very much for joining in for the screencast. I appreciate your time. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'm cbowen@microsoft.com, or contact me through my blog at blogs.msdn.com/cbowen. Thanks again.